I became a filmmaker in a matter of death or life.
I want to get rid of the guilt and the shame, whatever I felt as a child.
I have to talk about that. I have to do something. I have to show that. So, and this is when the fire gets started.
Herzlich willkommen zu einer wirklich speziellen Podcast-Episode. Speziell, weil es ist ein gemeinsamer Podcast von Rock und Mundala und von ZFF. Es ist ein Live-Podcast. Wir sind heute in wunderschönen Sundhausen Zimmerleuten. Und noch eine Spezialität. Diese Episode nehmen wir auf Englisch auf. So, that's my role in German, and we're going to switch back to English now. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. A bit of an introduction. I'm Olivia Kinghorst. I'm a moderator and journalist. I do a lot of events, and every time I get to come here, what I love is that we can slightly put away the data and the figures. Yes, we've got that already, but then we can focus a little bit on the stories, emotion, and narratives that you'll be hearing from our speakers later on. Today's session is all about crafting stories against the odds. And what I mean by this is it's always difficult to bring a story to life. But when you have the extra challenges of difficult filming conditions, when you have the challenge of dealing with very sensitive topics and trying to portray very complex characters, suddenly this task gets even harder. The second part of our discussion we want to address is, of course, that's why we're all here, how we can elevate women in front and behind the camera. So it is my very great pleasure to welcome a stellar lineup of guests. They're all sitting right here today. They're going to be talking about how they're dealing with these issues, and of course they're all women. So I'm going to bring you up one by one. We've got, first of all, Maria Brendel, director and screenwriter. Just please come on up. Give them a round of applause if they come on up. Next up, we have Wad Al-Khatib, an acclaimed Syrian filmmaker, journalist, and activist known for her very powerful documentaries. And third of all, we have Lina Vodovia, an award-winning Moldovan, a freelance journalist and filmmaker. So give them a round of applause. Okay. Let's slowly take a seat up. Feel free to make yourself comfortable. I think I will take a seat here, and then we can have all the guests take a seat there. Now, I just had a quick chat with all the ladies here, and they said what they wanted from this discussion today was really a conversation where you can be open. So I invite all of you today to really just speak about from the heart and be able to speak to each other as well. This is not just me asking a question and putting you on the spot. It's all about exchanging best practices. Just to kick off, perhaps, Steven Spielberg said famously, "I get to dream for a living. I dream for a living." So in your view, why is filmmaking the best job in the world for you? And Maria, I'm going to hand the first question over to you.
Yeah, so I think it's really fun to make movies, of course. But you also have the chance to bring like topics to the people. So you get a louder voice, you be heard. And I think movies are kind of a peaceful weapon because you can bring stories, characters, topics to a lot of people, and this is what I really enjoy by making movies.
What? How would you perceive this? Is it a peaceful weapon in your view?
Yeah, I think it's very dangerous weapon, and I would love to see it as peaceful as it could be. But for me, I think, I became a filmmaker in a matter of situation where it was for me death or life. I started filming because it was the only way for me to face what happened in Syria. I was an activist. I started filming because it was the only way to kind of like show that we existed as people who ask for freedom, for dignity. So my first film was all about my experience in Syria, and I did it because I lost everything. My home, everyone I know there, and for me it was the only way to create like a home for me. And this journey continues with my second and third film, which I'm here with. It was all about fighting, and fighting in a way that, maybe it seems peaceful, but it's actually, it's everything we lost, everything we had. So like, it's my only way to survive. And that's why I'm still doing this. That's why I'm still able to sit down here and talk to you all. So for me, it's really like, it's the only way for me to just exist. Yeah.
Yeah, that's very powerful. I think for me, as I started as a journalist, and I really loved telling stories, and especially stories of the marginalized people, people who didn't have, they actually had a voice, but their voice wasn't heard. So for me, it was very important to give that to them. And then with film, I realized, I started in 2016, working on a project with my husband here, with a film called Akase, My Home, where we both realized that the story is so much bigger and so much complex than just what we could have done for TV, let's say, piece, that we decided to stick and to follow these characters that we followed in the story for 4 years. And that's when I realized that film is such a privilege, and for me, it's just an honor to be able to spend so much time on a story and to bring it to the world. And I realized it has a huge impact, or it can have. It has it has this tremendous power, film in general, of changing and creating social change in general. So. Yeah, I'm just still in love. The film that we're here with is my debut, so I'm still at the beginning, let's say, and I am very in that period where I'm very much in love with what I do now.
That's incredible to hear, and of course you're sitting before us all today as successful directors. Oh, we have a bit of a technical issue. Yes, is it the earring?
No. Yeah.
Do you know what? I have a fun fact. A lot of these equipment are designed for men. They're usually big. Women always... Exactly. Yeah, Caroline is nodding. Women always have to take off their earrings and no jewellery. So this is nothing against the tech team. It's just how these things are designed. But back to the story. So all of you are sitting before us as successful directors. This is how we know you. But I know that all of you are also human. So for us to get to know you better, maybe if you can share, how do we see your own personal story and your background being reflected in your filmography?
Should I start?
Yeah, happy for you to start.
Well, I grew up with making movies together with my grandfather. So he had this Super 8 camera, and we were like making little movies from the family, and we cut it and had these pieces and bring that together. And I really had a lot of fun doing this with my grandfather. It was really like our thing. And later I learned that telling stories and bring the people in topics which are important, and you have a whole world. You can create humans, and you can create stories, and you can try to bring difficult topics to the people at home, and they can sit on their couch or in the cinema and have a look at things they never knew before, maybe. So I was totally driven by telling stories and bringing stories about injustice to people. So this is my thing. So I always had to like move on when I see something is like not fair to people, and I want to start fighting.
And this we will discuss very shortly in your latest film. Yeah. Well, maybe you can follow up there.
We don't have the cinema perspective in Syria before 2011. It was a lot of things, like we only allowed to watch things like were mentored by the government and chosen by the government. And even the cinema as a culture is not something we have. Like like culturally, it's not something very familiar. So I haven't seen a lot of films before, like maybe very famous films like Titanic or something like this. But for me, like, it's actually started when the revolution started in 2011, when we started to see that everything we learned, everything we felt, was totally kind of wrong or meant to be set in one position, and we had to break down everything we've learned. And this is where it started. The camera turned from something we fear, something we don't like, to the only way for us to like save really what was happening. So the regime was denying like all the protests, every video, every clip we get out, and like they were shooting, arresting people. So for us, that little like camera, even if it's like a phone, which is really like bad quality, it became something very valuable and very important. And day by day, because of course with journalism and news, you know, the headline stays for 3 seconds until the new headlines come up. So documentaries and films became kind of more way to be able to make people live, yeah, and understand and see beyond these like headlines. So when I made for my first film, like I literally didn't know anything about making films before making that film. And with my second film, it became more like as a career, I understood more, I've learned from my first film. And then my third film, I'm back to the same point where we started. I did it because I had to do it. There was no other way. So it's always like a way of, you know, like fighting off existence. Like this film, the third film, is about the earthquake that hit Syria and Turkey last year. I meet so many people and tell them about this, and they barely heard of this. Mm-hmm. Like a tragedy where 60,000 people were killed, and it's not a natural disaster. Like there's a lot beyond, you know, just this headline. So it, in a way or not, like for us in my area, you know, like from the Middle East or for refugees all over the world, it became really a way of having like compassion and empathy and connection with people, and make people really kind of like go beyond what they hear about others and different people. And even within the industry itself, it was amazing to hear what you're talking about, because there's so many layers as well of like others, you know, we're in one place, we are female, in another place, we are diverse, we're the others, even if we are like, you know, female, and then there's another way of being displaced or refugees. So like all of this really makes everything harder, but also it makes more worth it to keep fighting. And that's why I'm really glad to be here with these amazing people here. It's like really, really appreciated.
And yeah. Thank you for sharing that and being so open. Perhaps Lena, maybe growing up in Moldova, you can speak about some of the childhood experiences there.
Yeah, I was thinking about that while I was listening to all these. First of all, I want to say that I'm so thankful for being, so grateful for being here. And so when I first got the invitation, I was amazed by my colleagues here. I know Vad from her first film, so I know exactly what she's talking about. For me, filmmaking was, and journalism, and later on filmmaking, was just a tool for, or not just a tool, because I think it's something that we all need. It's a platform for, as I said earlier, giving voice to people that otherwise can't be heard or can't have their voices heard. And this, I was thinking about this recently. I think it comes, and I'll share a little bit about the film that I'm premiering here today, because it's personal and it's very relevant for this question. So the film that we're bringing here is called Tata, and it's about the relationship between me and my father, who raised us in a quite violent, me and my two sisters, quite violent environment. And growing up in a house where you are always silenced, and whenever you're trying to oppose something that you know it's not right and it's not fair, you are silenced in many you know, ways. I think this is what sparked in me this wish and deep desire to go out there and just help other people to not get silenced or shamed for what they are and what they believe and think. And yeah, Moldova is, I don't know how many of you know where this country is, but it's between Romania and Ukraine. So I guess you know a little bit about both of them. And right between them, it's this tiny country, Moldova. But what I discovered with the film is that it's not really something specific, culturally specific to that region, what I'm talking about in the film, because it starts with me trying to help my father, who's a migrant worker in Italy and is being exploited by his employer. But then I move into exploring the roots of violence generally in my family and in the people around us, in the society that we live in the world that we travel. And I think it's just so spread, and it's so important to speak about all these heavy topics. And this is why film is nice, because you get to do that and bring out emotions that connect us all, regardless of our boundaries, you know, both mental and geographical boundaries, I would say. So, yeah, for me, it was always about, I want to be able to get rid of the guilt and the shame and, you know, whatever I felt as a child witnessing those things, and help others as well mm-hmm. to do that.
It's important you mention this, and maybe for our audience, Lina talks about herself and her father in the film, and it's quite complicated because on the one hand, you had this difficult relationship with your dad, but then suddenly he tells you that he's being abused or exploited by his employer. Is it true that you also saw photos?
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And that made you have to revisit the relationship with your father and maybe the intergenerational trauma that was already there. What were the conversations like talking with your father through this? What is the relationship now?
Yeah, well, the film starts with my father sending me a video message showing me some bruises on his arms. So there's going to be spoilers here, but I still hope that you are going to watch the film. And he asks for help. And he's been working in Italy for 25 years, so not far from here, northern Italy, at a very big winery. And I, as a journalist, he sends that to me because he's helpless and he's hopeless, actually, and he doesn't know who to turn to for help. He sends it to me. And I, on the other hand, as a journalist, familiarized with this kind of situations because I've investigated this kind of stories before, my first instinct is to, of course, I know how to deal with this. I know how to do, but then it's my father who, you know, beat me and my mom and my sisters when we were young. And all these, it suddenly triggers all these memories in my head and all these feelings, and I don't know how to deal with it. But nevertheless, I ask my partner, Radu, and we go to Italy. We hand him a hidden camera, and he starts recording evidence of abuse. So he wears this hidden camera, and we see on the camera how the employer becomes abusive to him. And this, of course, triggers in me all sorts of emotions and all sorts of memories that I buried deep when I left Moldova and moved to Romania to become a journalist. And the film becomes an exploration for this relationship, and I start looking beyond just our relationship and at the cultural background that he has, our history. We see how spread it is and how normalized generally aggression, abuse, violence is in a very heavy patriarchal society. And we see that in different circles that he around him or around our family. And it's quite disturbing. But then I think the getaway is that, you know, in the end, it's a film about survival. It talks about all the women in my family and how we survived. And I mean, extended family as well. There's my aunt, there's my grandmother as well, and how we survived, each of us, our history, basically. And yes, in the end, I think we learned that love is what saves us all. And if we keep talking about it, then That's the only way to create change in mentality and in action.
Well, I'm happy to hear that in producing this very difficult film, maybe the family structural fabric was perhaps strengthened. What it's been quite difficult for you bringing your film to life, but on a different level, we're talking about natural disasters, unrest, earthquake hitting parts of Turkey and Syria. And in your film, you choose to focus on two specific families. What is it like embedding yourself so deeply into someone else's life?
So I was just finishing my second film, We Dare to Dream, which is my only a little bit optimistic film. And I was very exhausted, like with the whole kind of experience of, you know, having like a proper film as a career. I was like director alone on that film. And it was, as a production wise, it was very big. We went into so many countries. It was COVID. So it was like a huge kind of experience for me. So I was feeling, you know, I just want to finish this and just take some time to process everything I've learned through these years. When I was nearly at the end, couple of days in the post-production, when I woke up one day at the news that 7.8 earthquake that hit the south of Turkey, where I lived there for 1 year and a half. That's where my second daughter was born, where my mom, dad, and sister still living there. And so many people who survived with us from Syria, they are around that area. I was in the UK. I'm there as a refugee. So the second we heard the news, it was just something very huge, very big, very concerning, very like scaring. And I was able to like get the information that my family are safe. They were in the street. They managed to get out. But also, 1 hour after an hour, we start to understand that it's very big scale. Like there's a whole cities where like no one is getting out. So we started to follow the news. I've tried to run quickly to the embassy in London. I wanted to go to Turkey. I'm an activist. I'm part of journalism in my DNA. So I wanted to do something. We were not allowed to travel because of our refugee status. So I just sat down in London trying to do anything we can over online. Through this was following some of our friends' stories. So we have Fadi and Fuad, both Syrian activists. Fadi is a filmmaker and Fuad is an aid worker. So I was trying just to follow their families where they want to know what happened with them. We were very close even before, and day after day, we like just try to do everything from far, even if that means like sharing location from people, houses to other people who can go, and journalists or anyone there, fundraising for the White Helmet and all the like rescue people there, just to be able to manage to do something. So I followed this for the time that happened, and then someone came to me with the idea that they wanted to do the film. It's a producer in New York, Sheila Nevins, who's very kind of well-known in the industry. And I've met her when I met for Sama, and she was like just amazing. She was so angry that the world did not really hear enough about this. And she wanted me to do more like observer story. For me, like, I wasn't good. I wasn't well enough at all to do this. But again, back to the same point, I don't have an option. I have the platform. I know everything. I don't need even to do any research about this. I even have videos who've been sent to me at that time. So I will just do it. So for me, I had the conversation with Fadi, Fuad, and his wife, Safa. Immediately, everyone was like, yes, we want to do it. They both had like great loss with this. But they also understand the same like feeling we have, that telling the story is the only way for us after we lost everything. So we started working together. We collect every footage they had from the same moments. We did the story. Safa, who's Fuad's wife, was trapped under the rubble for 9 hours with her 40 days baby. She managed to survive, to make him survive alone. So she's a brilliant, like amazing woman, mother, who really did like hero work alone. And it's a lot about grief, about understanding, you know, how to stand up again after all of this. It's a lot of calling for justice, for accountability, because again, this is, seems like a natural disaster, but this building did not fall because of the earthquake. They fall down because of the irresponsibility, the corruption, all the legal things. Also, there's a lot beyond just why this happened, but also when this happened, how are we as government who know we are on the fault line, we're not ready at all. Like also the UN and the responsibility the international community has toward northwest of Syria where there's no government, like aid and rescue forces never entered the border. These people who are around like 4 million people who are all displaced a couple of times because of Assad and Russia. These people were left alone to face this death again with no help.
It starts off as an earthquake, but really it's a broader look at all the complex like unrest and social issues that surround it.
Exactly.
Maria, your film was quite difficult for me to read about because it is in fact about a true story, a woman, a Swiss woman in 1904 who goes to court because she has killed her son who is only 5 years old. Can you take us back to this period and why a woman is forced to make this decision and how she is being portrayed?
Yeah, so in 1904, unmarried women had no rights and she had no chance like giving this son a safe home. So, of course, I couldn't talk to the real person, but what I did was trying to understand why did she see the death as the best option, maybe to protect the son, because
it was a difficult time to live in.
Right. He would have a really bad life. So I was kind of asking myself the question, maybe trying to protect the son for a bad life is like more important for her than trying to have her son alive. So this is how my process started by building the character. And I see it's a really hard topic because a woman is able to do something like that. For us, it's incredible, right? But in this time, she had no chance because this child came out rape and all the rights were by men. So an unmarried woman had no right. When you are raped by a man and he is married, he didn't get punished by law because the anger of his wife is punishment enough. So all these things were like in my head and sometimes I was really angry because it's 120 years, it's not so much. So I really tried to focus on all the female characters in the movie. So I saw, of course, it's a male-dominated world and a legal system dominated by men. But also, there are a lot of so important female characters because this woman played a huge role by building the world we have today. So as we heard from Carolina, we are far away from something we can call a goal, but of course, it's better than years ago. So I really want to give all the female characters the space to tell like the stories of showing, okay, they tried to come out because we have a better world today than 120 years ago. But yeah, we saw still a lot of things are the same today in different countries on a different way. But it's still the same fight. So we are still fighting for the same rights in this world, not only in Switzerland.
And as I understand, your lead actress is actually in the audience today. Where are you? If you could.
Hi. There she is.
This is such a difficult role to play, not only because on the one hand, you're trying to be portraying you're the perpetrator, you've committed a crime, but you're also a victim of the criminal justice system. And I think on the other hand, just emotionally being able to talk about these topics and dealing with murder of a son is incredibly difficult. So hats off to you. If anyone is interested in the film, it's called Frida's Fall. I'm going to open up to all of you and ask you, how do you feel that being a woman, having this emotional intelligence, has informed the films that you've created? How has that been an advantage?
I think the most important thing is trying to be in every character you have. So trying to really feel and understand. And you have, of course, you sometimes have a different opinion than your characters, but really try to find something that you understand, that you try to understand the behavior of everyone, even when it's a dark character. This is the most important thing for me.
And why this is particular, especially in your case, because she didn't mention this, but after she produced the film, she didn't just say goodbye and walk away. No, the stories still resonated with you. You still keep in touch with the families because you felt that it was your duty to still follow up.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's very hard to keep that with every film you do, especially when you have, like, I don't know how many films you've done. But I think for me, it's really, like, because I made each story for a reason, and this reason is very personal, I feel like, you know, this, like, this connection with these people, the trust that they gave you, or, like, you owned, you know, to tell the story, but also there's a lot of responsibility beyond the film itself. And, you know, when you take, like, something really sensitive and important from someone, when they share something, and then you're going out with the world to share the story, there's a lot of responsibility beyond that. But I think in so many places, you know, like, as a filmmakers, like, yes, we're on the edge in so many places. We fall down in so many places. And, yeah, maybe I agree with the idea that, yes, we should, as a woman, we're not afraid to fall down. We're not afraid to really, like, express and, like, break down sometimes. But the point is, after this, how can we stand up? And maybe we are all here because we stood up at some point. But I also kind of, Carolina, what you were saying, I know how many women, they are not make it to the industry because when they fall down, they couldn't stood up. And that's not because they don't have, like, the energy or the power to stand up. It's a lot of opportunities, and it's a lot of hurdles after hurdles in every place. And the good film is good film, but no, it's not always, like, it's not gonna win. I've had this in so many places, which is, it's an amazing film. You had all the right people in. You have the amazing story. You have all the press. You had something similar in TIFF. And then, no, the industry doesn't pick up. Like, it's a very, I'm still trying to understand. And we need a lot of this conversation to understand more, because the industry itself is not, like, you can't really identify it in, you know, like, lines. There is something you can't understand in so many places. But I think what's really important with all of us being here is really to open these doors to each other, to be able to build this connection, to walk out from this place, not just as a, we know now each other, but also how can we continue this conversation? How can we do things together? Kate and what she's done in Cannes is brilliant, and she's doing much more things. And the way how, just like, my phone was ringing one day and she was like, hello, I'm Kate. I'm doing a project about displacement. Do you want to be with me? So this is the way how, you know, we hold each other's hand out and be able, like, to like really get a real work, active actions after this conversation. I think this is really the ideal and important thing. And for someone like me, who I'm still, like, upcoming filmmaker, yes, I went too far, you know, to the Academy nomination, to BAFTA winning. But at the end of the day, like, I'm still far beyond so many other, like, filmmakers. And here it's more about how can we open more doors to other people when we have the platform. Yeah, and this is, I think, again, you know, what you're doing here is amazing, because it is coming, and it's hopefully we're gonna keep pushing all together. And yeah, if someone think we're there, you can take us with you.
Let's take the chance and opportunity now to actually open up to all of you. You've been listening to these incredible women over the past, say, 40, 50 minutes. What are some of the questions that are brewing in your mind? If we could open up to the floor. Yes, we've got a question in the middle, and maybe if you can also stand up and introduce yourself.
Hi, I wanted to ask, all of you have such compassionate stories, but also all of you focus on real stories. Do you think it's a general trend that women focus more on like realistic stories rather than fiction?
I'm a documentary filmmaker, and I am on one project as development as fiction. But I think, like, for me, I don't know, maybe it's part of that because I am a woman, but like the things that we came across in a documentary, like real events, things is just mind blowing. And for me, like in some places, I think in each one of these films, there's one moment when I felt if this has been scripted, I'm not convinced it's true. And for me, the joy and the excitement and the passion of this is just like unbelievable. And you can check out that is in my first film for Sama, when there was a baby born because the mom was injured of an aircraft, and the doctor get the boy out of her like as a cesarean, and the boy is totally blue, like, and they kept trying to, you know, like see if he's alive or not. And there's this scene when he opened his eyes in front of the camera, then start crying. Like if this has been scripted, you know, I would be like, come on. So yeah. Like there's something in life which is we've coming across, maybe any of you, you know, like any of us in our daily life when we think like this can't be true. And this is for me, like I love documentaries because when I come across this, it's just like unbelievable feeling. Yeah.
Yeah, it's I would second that, because I think documentaries are so, on one hand, they're underprivileged because fiction always has, you know, they have, you know, it has stars and a lot of liberty, I think, to manipulate and change and just find the best ways to tell a story. But I find that, I don't know, after 15 years of both journalism and documentary filmmaking, I find that documentaries are so much more powerful, and once you get something on camera, a scene like Vaad mentioned before, it's so much more powerful. I remember that scene, and it stayed with me, and nothing that I see in a fiction film has touched me so deeply and so powerful. So I think that we are a little bit I think that documentaries deserve more attention than they actually have, because I think that they, like the way they reflect reality is so much more powerful, and the fact that they're doing that, right? It's, and we all know films, documentaries that come from different parts of the world that tell us so much about those parts of the world. And yeah, I'm forever a fan of documentaries, even though I love fiction and acting in general. But I just feel that there's so much more power in bringing out real stories in a cinema.
And I might tell you otherwise in 5 years. I don't know. This is for now. I didn't do fiction yet, so I don't know. But you, what do you think?
Yeah, so I think talking about emotional intelligence, I think this is why a lot of women are freaking out for your stories. Because you spend so much time with the story, years. And I think when you're not catched by your topic, it's sometimes harder to make movies. So sometimes you just listen or read a story and you're like catched in a way. It's kind of falling in love with a person, a topic, something, and you really feel I have to talk about that, I have to do something, I have to show that. So, and this is when the fire gets started, and you have all the power to work for a project, because you really need a lot of power to work over years and to fight all these fights and get financed and stand there and say, yeah, I can do it. A lot of people will say, no, you can't. And so I think you need this sparkle. And I think, yeah, a lot of us are kind of inspired by true persons and seeing something like heroes in like true events.
I hope that answers your question.
Thank you for bringing
Do we have another question from the audience? Yes. Oh, a very eager head.
Right next door.
Okay.
Hi. I'm Flavia, and I'm really also privileged to have you here. Being a woman, I unfortunately still encounter conversations with both sexes where it's just frustrating. And I was wondering if I could be curious and ask you a personal question in terms of if you might share a moment, an experience, a conversation that you faced in your careers where you were not seen as the same valued gender. And how did you overcome that to maybe take that as a personal motivation or inspiration to go further on in different conversations?
I was thinking about this. Yeah, so there's been, I think that being a female reporter, filmmaker, artist in general has both advantages and disadvantages. Sometimes you get to connect to people way better. And there's a shared kind of emotion and there's a deeper relationship that you're building with your characters or the people you're writing about, the people you're filming. And that's a big advantage. That's a big, that helps you a lot in telling a better story, creating a better understanding of a person, of a phenomenon, and so on. But many times you get overlooked, and especially if you're in a team with other people. For instance, I covered for when the first invasion of Ukraine started in 2014, I covered the war there with many colleagues, and it happened to me that the people would just not talk to me, but they would just look at that. But also, we're talking about a patriarchal state, about it's a different society than what we see in Western countries, and I think change is slower there. So I'll say that, I'll put that on the table. But it also, there's been situations, yes, when I'm standing next to a man and we're both working on the same thing and the person is not looking to me in my eyes. They just don't see me. They just overlook me. I feel invisible. And it makes me angry. It makes me furious. It makes me, sometimes I go and cry, but then I just realized that that's what I've been doing my whole life, right? My father never saw when I told him, stop, this is not right, this is hurting us, it's not good, you know? So I just keep, talking about falling and flying, yeah. you get one of those, a hit like that, and then you stand up for yourself, and you learn how to over, it makes you stronger. I think, it builds some sort of resilience in front of that, and then you deal with it different.
I just want to share, in Aleppo, for 5 years, I was the only female videographer in the city who lives there. There was some journalists coming in and out, foreigners, or even Syrians who come to visit and go. But I was kind of the only one who lived there. That was my life. I was filming every there. And there was always two ways of looking at me from my other, some of them are amazing. And the only intention for me to similar to this, which is protection, no, please don't go. No, you're a woman, or you're not allowed to come to the front line. Or if there's bombing and we all going toward the place to film, they were like, no, we're not gonna drop you off. You're not allowed to go. And there's other ways people did not even see me as I'm doing something important or meaningful, just because I'm a woman. Then this was for 5 years. And then when my film got out and it was released to the world, I did this very small screening for only filmmakers and journalists who were living with us in Aleppo. I wanted to get their opinion on this before it was out. And I remember the look, how they were all kind of remembering all these memories. We were all there. This is our city. This is what we've been through. And one of them told me, I know you. We know each other. I've never got interested in what you're doing. I saw you with the camera and all of this, but like it didn't really mean anything to me. And when the film was out, it was something even other people who are far away, who I got comments of, or they were like, no filming, you can't film just because I am a woman. While if one of my colleagues were there, they were just like, okay. On the same side, like, you know, some of these people were really amazing. They were like taking me wherever they are able to go. They were like, you know, like helping me, and like, just there's different kind of opinion and people. But in general, for me, like to be the only woman in the place and then get something out, and something really kind of was different from each one of them, like opinion was something. But then you go out to the world, and the minute I was displaced out of Syria, I went to the UK, and I got maybe, it was the RTS award, the best cinematography. And it was the only woman in 24 years to get the cinematography award. Amazing. And I was like, it was amazing for everyone in the room. I was like, what do you mean? Like, we're in the UK, it's same. Like, it can't be true for me. And then I start to understand that, yeah, it's different from Syria, but it's not actually amazing.
It's not that different.
And then one thing, when, like, then later on, when after my first film and second film, I was developing something, it was still like very new idea, and we got connected to a producer from the US. He was very well-known and good guy, as I've been told, and we had similar, like, so many meetings and stuff to develop the idea. I was the director, he was the producer, and we had the other lady who was her story, but also I wanted her to be a co-director. I didn't want just her to tell the story, I wanted to help her to tell the story. So I was trying to really be careful about the way how we deal with this. It went too far into the conversation, and then at some point I felt he's not seeing any of us. He's not even understanding that we're actually bringing this to the table. We understand emotionally and physically and all of this way beyond what he thinks. And it ended up very bad in a conversation where, like, he was not respectful. He was just, and this is where my first time when I tried, and I did say no, and I did get out. I rescued this project out. I was already paid some expenses based on his comment that yes, we will get this amount of money, and yeah, the project still until now stuck because I'm not able to move forward with this. But for me, that was like really important moment for myself to understand that yes, I went through a lot, but I'm able also to say no, and yes, maybe I'm no like longer able to move on forward with this, but one day I will, and that's for me would be like my winning way as a female filmmaker.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's incredible that you're able to set those boundaries and not just take whatever comes because you have those values and those morals. Ladies and gentlemen, we know the phrase, time flies when you're having fun. And in this case, we are a little bit over time. So I want to wrap up here. But for anyone who's in the audience, who's in the film industry, a budding filmmaker, please come up to these incredible women later. Exchange your ideas and best practices. I mean, that's what we're here for. And once again, we truly have to thank them for being so open today. Thank you. Thank you.